You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome into Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we'll hear from the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie was joined this week by Heather Cox Richardson, a historian and author. They discuss the history of the Constitution, political parties, and democracy itself. This is the first portion of a two-part interview. Find the rest in the podcast at civicmedia.us, on Spotify, or Apple Music.
There's nothing that lights me on fire more than talking about some of the most important ideas of our time in a historical context with experts. My name is Maggie Dawn. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And this woman is on fire. Her name is Heather Cox Richardson. She's a professor of history at Boston College and expert in the Civil War Reconstruction. She's taught at MIT, UMass Amherst, and she has one of the most widely read substacks called Letters from an American. I subscribe to it. It is amazing. And she's here today to share all of that with each one of you. Welcome, Heather. Thanks so much for making time.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here.
We've got so much to talk about, so I'm do not pass go, just jump right in. You wrote a book in 2023 called Democracy Awakening, Notes on the State of America. Let's start there. What is the state of America, most specifically the state of our democracy in America? And we'll dig into some of the details there throughout this interview.
We're in a really interesting moment right now, I think, in our history. So that book was originally written to explain the question that people ask me most, which is, how did we get here? What on earth is going on? And how we get out? So it's three different sections that cover those things. But since that book came out about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, I think, we have seen, I think, the what I tried to identify in the book, which was a growing pro-democracy movement in the United States to push back against 40 years in which we had lost the guardrails of our democracy and began to create first a sort of oligarchy that became, under former President Donald Trump, the potential for a dictatorship. Now, in this particular moment, that movement for democracy, which is not about the Democrats, by the way, it's about those people who care about American democracy, is in an existential standoff against the people who are supporting the MAGA Republicans, who have very openly called for overturning democracy. We will decide which of those two visions of America is going to dominate the other. And so as a historian, I look at this moment and I think, you know, this is really it. This is one of those extraordinarily crucial moments in the survival of American democracy. And the question is whether the people will prevail as they have in our past or the authoritarians.
One of your recent letters, if I will, believe this is from September 17th, you quoted at length Benjamin Franklin's thoughts and sentiments as he recorded them as the Constitution was debated at the Constitutional Convention. And you ended with some of Benjamin Franklin's words as they approached the final vote after this protracted, passionate debate about exactly the words of our nation's founding, one of our nation's founding documents. And you quoted Mr. Franklin saying this, quote, "I agree to this Constitution with all its faults, if they are such, because I think a general government necessary for us. And it astonishes me to find this system approaching so near to perfection as it does. And I think it will astonish our enemies who are waiting with confidence to hear that our states are on the point of separation, only to meet hereafter for the purpose of cutting one another's throats. On the whole," he said to his colleagues, "I cannot help expressing a wish that every member of the convention who still may have objections to it would with me on this occasion doubt a little of his own infallibility, and to make manifest our unanimity, put his name to this instrument." And on September 17th, 1787, they did so. What I think that brings to mind for me, Heather, is the call today to each and every one of us to effectively reaffirm the Constitution, though we may have quibble or criticisms, that now is our time to each be a Ben Franklin. What do you think of this moment that faces American voters?
Well, I think that's right. And I love that quotation from Franklin, partly because he's an old man by then. I think he's 81, and he's seen so much of the world. And what he says is, you know, this isn't what I would have done all the way, but, you know, maybe I'm wrong. And that humility, I think, is crucial in this moment. But I also think that one of the things that I didn't identify in that piece, but I think is so important, is that what Franklin is saying, well, first of all, is that if we don't do this, in his case, it was very clear that other countries were sitting there waiting to tear the States apart. And of course, nowadays we have Russia and Iran and China and other countries that would do the same to today's United States. But that also he is looking at what it means to be a member of a democracy. And that is, they created a document and then they gave us the ways to change it. And what he's saying is, you know, in my lifetime, I've seen a whole lot of stuff. And this looks really good to me. But if it isn't good in certain places, we can change it. Well, and that's what it means to be a member of a democracy, is to recognize that there isn't some perfect moment or perfect past that we can get back to. That serves authoritarians by saying there are absolute rules in the world, and so long as you put a strong man in place, he will bring them back, erasing anybody who opposes him. But the democracy is really about saying, let's see how it works for us to do this. And if it doesn't work, let's adjust it. And then we'll adjust it again. And then we'll adjust it again. And democracy then is not about an end game. The process is the end game. And that, you know, it's, I love that thing from him, because so many, I just actually on the plane out here, I just reread the Madison's minutes from the Constitutional Convention, you know, as one does, right?
Yeah, but, right. In our free time.
But they're so, I don't know, humorless partly, but also so all of those guys are absolutely convinced that they know exactly what to do next. And then Franklin, who's way older than all of them, sort of sits there and he's been through everything. He sort of sits there and says, boys, you know what? We're not all perfect. Let's see how we can live together. It's just a wonderful moment.
Yeah, that it's something that I touch upon frequently in dialogue with all of you out there, our listeners, in that one of the things that I look for in elected officials and political leaders is that idea of humility, this openness that I may be wrong. And so what does that require of me when assessing a specific policy or a moment, right? And one of the things that has concerned me so deeply since the rise of the MAGA movement is the absolute certitude of things, right? And that, I think, really poses its own sort of existential threat. I want to ask you about yet another very recent post, which I think builds upon this idea that we're talking about here, Heather. On the 19th of September, you talked about the fact that, frankly, our founding fathers didn't believe in political parties, didn't want them, but we've evolved into a party system. And you wrote this, which I think speaks so deeply to this tipping point that we find ourselves at. You wrote, quote, democracy depends on at least two healthy political parties that can compete for voters on a level playing field. Although the men who wrote the Constitution hated the idea of political parties, they quickly figured out that parties tie the voters to the mechanics of Congress and the presidency. And they do far more than that. Before political thinkers legitimized the idea of political opposition to the king, disagreeing with a person could lead to execution or banishment. And you go on to say that the parties are a way, they're part of the system that allows for the peaceful transition of power, but that is only legitimate. It only works when there is a level political playing field for everyone, quote, so that a party must constantly compete for voters by testing which policies are most popular and getting rid of the corrupt or unstable leaders voters would reject, end quote. Wow. Boy, that sure sounds like an indictment of the modern Republican Party, which I've said many times, I think, has lost any claim to political legitimacy in today's America. Your thoughts?
Well, so you've identified that, I think, correctly. But one of the things I was trying to do in that post was point out that the modern day Republican Party is a mess. I mean, it's in the middle of a civil war itself, and the people that it has put up, they're not bringing their best, right? And no. So when you write about that, when somebody like me writes about that, people have said, oh, you're a shill for the Democrats, because the Democrats don't have that kind of scandal. And to the degree they do, like with Robert Menendez, who was convicted of working for a foreign government recently, they got rid of him. You know, yes. they purge them. So in fact, in this moment, it's very, very difficult. People are like, oh, she's not both sidesing this. Well, you really can't, because the reality is one party has gone over the cliff and the other party is still pretty normal. But what I was really trying to do there was to say there's a systemic reason for that. And I kind of think about it like a soccer game of all things. And that's that if you're playing on an even playing field, two soccer teams have to compete against each other. They both have to get good. They have to get good players. They have to work out. They have to try harder and harder to beat the other team. But when one team starts to play the refs, they don't have to be quite as good, right? But the other team has to be better, because they've got to walk uphill, right, against those refs. And then if all of a sudden the weak team gets to have more players, and the good team gets fewer players, I mean, you can see where this is going. One team has to get leaner and meaner and better and better. And the other team can, you know, have some guys who don't play very well, and then can have some people who really don't play very well, but are well connected, and so on. If you extrapolate that back onto politics, what you've got is a party in which people do not have to compete for votes because they know they're going to win. And so you can put in the Lauren Boberts and the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Mark Robinsons and those people who are really not good representatives of the American people. While on the other hand, the Democrats are really bringing their best, because the corrupt people get weeded out really quickly because there's such scrutiny of them. The ones who aren't that strong get weeded out because there's so many really good people. But this is why American democracy, including the Republican Party, needs to have a free and fair playing field.
Folks, that's Heather Cox Richardson, professor of history at Boston College, author, 7 books to her name, and author of Letters from an American. You can find that on Substack. We're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to dig in more deeply to the history of the Electoral College and what that means to the system and that very level playing field, or unlevel playing field, as the case may be, after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Next up on this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from the Todd Alba Show. Todd, doing the show live from L.A. this week, spoke with Ken Broski, director of a documentary called Closure, all about UW's 2-year campuses that have been closing their doors.
Yeah, freedom. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are live in Los Angeles, California. Right now, we are honored and pleased to be joined by another filmmaker. He is Ken Broski. He is a writer, director, producer of the new documentary film called Closure, the story of the University of Wisconsin system closing so many of these 2-year campuses. He is also an assistant professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Professor Broski, thanks so much for taking time, and congratulations on this new important film.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself. We always like that with a new guest. Where did you kind of grow up, and how did you kind of get into this passion of filmmaking, particularly with an important documentary like this?
I grew up in Milwaukee, and I got my first teaching gig was with a technical college in Madison. And one day I was offered an opportunity to teach one class at the UW-Richland campus about, I think, 11 years ago. And I ended up spending a year there. I really loved the campus, and I really loved my colleagues there. And I ended up moving over to the Rock County campus in Janesville when another position opened. And so when I got the news this past May that the UW Waukesha campus was going to be closing, I felt like we needed to do some sort of look at what's happening, because at that point that was so shocking to me that you would close a campus that has 600 students enrolled, and I just felt like we needed some answers on how this was going to affect communities and students and teachers and staff.
Well, I think you bring up such a great point. And of course, people, longtime listeners of this show, we started this show in November of 2022, and it was right after that initial announcement by UW System President Jay Rothman that for all intent and purposes, he was closing that two-year campus. And we went out there and did a show, and it kind of kept going after that. And initially what we were told at the Richland campus is, well, it was due to enrollment, low enrollment. And I don't want to get into that as far as my opinion right now. I've said it on this show. I'm more interested in what you found. And I mean, do you consider yourself a journalist per se, or is it more a storyteller and a filmmaker? But what in your work, what have you found with this narrative of, well, it's low enrollment? In Waukesha's case, I mean, that doesn't hold water, does it?
No, I think the problem started when $360 million was cut from the UW system budget. And that started in about 2012. And what that did for the UW colleges, I don't think a lot of people realize this, like the UW colleges, they had two sources of revenue, tuition and state funding. So you cut 20% of the state funding, and then you have a tuition freeze. And then what happens is you have a university composed of 14 campuses across the state who then have to cut 20% of their budget. And then surprise, surprise, right after this happens, right after like these hard decisions are made, all of a sudden enrollment plummets.
And you're still a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, correct?
Yes, I teach on the Rock County campus.
So I have to ask, I think people might be curious, after doing this film, which we have yet to see, it's going to be at Richland Center at the Center Cinema on Wednesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m., amongst other places. But is there any trepidation on your part as a faculty member that, well, hey, I mean, this might put my own job at risk?
Well, I feel really good about, where the Rock County campus is. We've had a lot of great support from Whitewater. We've seen our enrollment grow because we've had that support. And the Universities of Wisconsin embraces freedom of speech as a right. And so I'm not criticizing. All I'm doing is I'm trying to look for us, the opportunities for us to look back and learn from the mistakes that are happening, you know? And I think that that's a valid critique. Like, one of the things that's been driving me crazy about all of this is no one is doing any retrospective thinking about what we could have done better. You know, when the Richland campus closed in 2023, that should have been a red flag for every other university in our system to look and see what they've been doing with the two-year campuses so that those mistakes would not be replicated, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we knew for a fact that that kind of enrollment does not happen, that plummeting enrollment does not happen in one year because of high school demographics. And if we're not going to engage with the past, if we're not going to like actually think about what mistakes we've made, we're just going to repeat those mistakes. And it seems like it's still happening, which really concerns me because I have a fundamental love for the two-year campuses. I don't think that they can be replaced by technical colleges. I think what they do is different. And so what matters to me most is, you know, are we going to do something better in the future? Are we going to learn from the past so that we can retain as much as possible in terms of these campuses?
Talking to Ken Broski, writer, director, producer of this great new documentary film called Closure, the story of the UW system closing many of these two-year campuses across Wisconsin, premiering in Richland Center next Wednesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. I know you showed the film last night in Milwaukee. How did that go?
It went good. There were some people crying in the audience, which... Yeah. Was actually pretty expected. People in the audience booed Scott Walker, which was, I think, pretty, I mean, you know, expected to.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, one of the things that I should really stress is I didn't go into this with, like, a specific agenda. I just went into this to ask people questions. And the story that unfolded really was one of, you know, basically, like, communities losing something important and not getting a lot of very good answers about why it's happening beyond sort of, like, this boilerplate explanation that in the future there's going to be some enrollment issues, right? That's kind of why Waukesha is being closed right now, is in the future there's going to be problems.
I cannot wait to see this film. It's called Closure. You could go to DelavanFilms.com, just like the city, I'm assuming. DelavanFilms.com. Closure. Ken Broski, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Ken Broski, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll put this in our show notes as well as Amr's will, DelavanFilms.com. Come on back. We're live in Los Angeles, California, here on the road. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Civic Media Spotlight. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is up next. And we get to hear a real treat. It's his interview with legendary actress Charo, who was on the show this week. She talks about her upcoming performance in Baraboo, the origin of Coochie Coochie, and her times on the Love Boat.
We're back. Great to have you with me on this Wednesday night edition of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Todd checks in on the stream and says he can't wait to see the new Salem's Lot. We talked about that the other night when Todd was here. That's another good one. All right, keep those suggestions coming. Our question of the night, what is your favorite remake when it comes to movies? You can let us know on the stream or text us or call us. But right now you can't call because we have someone very special on the phone, and this is exciting. She is performing in Wisconsin early next month down in Baraboo, and she is a show business treasure, and she joins us now on Nightlight. Charo is here. Hello, Charo.
Oh, Pete, I'm so happy. Thank you. Thank you. Muchas gracias. I love to be in your show. I love the title, Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, because I'm a night person and I hear beautiful things about you.
You're very welcome, and thank you for being here. We are both Nightlight. I used to be a stand-up comedian, Charo, and there's something about performing in nightclubs. I got a taste of it for a few years. You've been doing it for so long, and I'm very impressed that you still love the night like that. That's great. Where are you now? Are you on a tour?
I am in Beverly Hills getting ready for a recording and doing a new album, recording beautiful of flamenco music. But yes, I am very excited because it's my first time, Pete, that I am going to be working in Wisconsin, Baraboo. I always work in Las Vegas, South Point, Indian casinos around the United States of America, concert, everywhere, perform at our center, but never I been in Wisconsin. And they say that it's very good weather now, but has tamales the audience. I am very excited. I would like to meet you. I would like to take the guitar with me and play for your audience a request, because I'm very excited, Pete. It's my first time. I came to America when my Gucci Gucci was only a Gucci Gucci, and I never been in Wisconsin.
Listen, Charo, you might want to end up moving here because you're going to have that great of a time in Baraboo. Let me just ask you this. Do you like cheese?
Everybody told me I love the cheese because I go from Spain, and it's a very famous cheese called, it is manchego. It comes from La Mancha. But your cheese that everybody told me, I'm going to have the time of my life because it's proteinas, and it's very famous. With coffee, it's merry. With a big publicity, everybody knows about el queso, the cheese.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be eating cheese for 24 hours. It's a great, not really, you have a great reputation with the cheese. Have you ever tried manchego?
I don't know if I have. I may have years ago.
Well, manchego, it comes from la cabra, the little, the goat. But the Wisconsin cheese is very, very famous.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a lot of friends because I work in Las Vegas, Pete.
Yeah.
And the hotel is South Point. And I got lucky. I got audience from all over the world. But since I start saying that I was coming to Wisconsin, everybody is telling me, you got to test the cheese, I swear.
That's right.
And I can't wait. I can't wait to meet you, too. I'm very excited because it's a brand new show, Pete.
Really?
What I'm doing is, oh, yes, every 6 months I change the show because the audience, they like it so much, and I have recurring audience, plus people film it in the cellular, the show. And after, I don't want to repeat myself. So right. I'm bringing brand new costume, brand new music, of course, flamenco guitar concert, salsa. I would like to meet you. And if you invite me ever, I would like to take my guitar and take a request and have fun and really became good friends. I like you very much, Pete.
Oh.
Everybody told me about you.
Well, thank Chihuahua. You very much.
Where did you come from, the name Chihuahua? What is your DNA?
You know, it's much more complicated than where your name comes from, believe it or not. It's like it was the Danzig region between Poland and Germany. I'm actually mostly Irish, so I'm just kind of a mess, Charo.
I love it.
Yeah, no, it's a great name. I love my last name, and you're very kind to say those words. We are north of Baraboo. I would love to come to the show, though. I think it sounds like an absolute blast, and I could bring you some cheese curds.
Muchas gracias. I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best because it's my first time. I will make a new friend, and it's my passion. I will never get old while music is alive. And just to perform in such a beautiful place, everybody's telling me. It's the place is so cute. In Baraboo, it's called Al Ringling Theatre.
Yep.
And it's a historic theatre. So if I'm going to feel like I'm into a beautiful past, you know, another time. And it's so intimate that I'm going to come down and dance salsa with the audience.
Oh, see,
it's a 90-minute show with 15-minute intermission, which will give me the opportunity to meet the audience, take a picture, and change costume. You're going to love my costume, Pete.
I love all your costumes. I watched some interviews with you today, somewhere from the 1980s, Charles, with when you were on David Letterman. I saw you interviewed by Larry King. You sound like you love life as much as you did now as you did then. What is the secret? Is it the music? Is it the dancing? Are your shows what keep you young?
Yes. Music will keep me happy and young forever and ever, and moving.
Yeah.
You got to move it. I have ants in my pants. I have to move. If I don't move, please, I feel very guilty. Also, by dancing flamenco, it's very good for your body and your legs. I want all the girls that are listening me now in your interview. Flamenco, it is just footwork, attitude, passion, and you hit the stage so strong that the footwork made your bones fight osteoporosis. So also, I jogging every day, but please say to the girl, wear two bras. Otherwise, if they run without bra, in 3 weeks, their maraca will be hanging down to the floor. I wear that, two bra, and I run about, I should say, minimum 45 to an hour.
Wow.
And,
that's impressive.
And then I love chocolate, and now I'm looking for it, the cheese in Wisconsin, Baraboo, and I love life.
It definitely shows. I mean, you've had a great career, a great life. You're still going strong. And my guest is Charo. You can check her out in Baraboo on October 11th at 7 p.m. How about this, folks? Tickets start at just $43, and that's a chance to see an absolute show business icon. You can't pass this
Thank
up.
So
it's
much.
In it's in Baraboo, October 11th at 7 p.m. at the Al Ringling Theater, historic theater.
Well,
you're very
I am
welcome.
Very grateful to you because it's my first time in Wisconsin. It's a fabulous job called Charo in Concert. I take a request, and I would like it, if I can meet you in person, it will be an honor. Muchas, muchas gracias. I'm very grateful.
I will do everything in my power to make that happen, and right back at you. I love, and you generously asked me to play guitar with you. I know you were probably half kidding at least, because you don't want that, Charo. I think we'll leave the guitar playing and the dancing to you, but I have a question for you. Where does Coochie Coochie come from?
Oh, una gracia. Coochie Coochie, show me the way to the bank. but Pete, it had nothing to do with sex. Everybody in America think that I'm talking about sex. No. I used to have, when I was a little girl, back in Spain, in a beautiful, that's why I'm going to like it, Wisconsin, because there's a lot of trees, beautiful nature. I was born in Murcia, a little town, now it's a city, in the south. And we have farm, big farm. And mi abuela, my grandma, loved animals. And she found out that a dog was very sick, that it was hit by a horse and cannot move. And she took a wheelbarrow, bring the horse to the farm, the dog, and care of him, but the dog broke a little bit the back. And when the dog get better, when he was happy, he wiggled, but because of the accident, he did not wait like a back and forth. He left and right, he was moving back and forth. And we call him Cuchillo, because when he bite you, it was danger. It was a very nasty big dog, but he loved me so much that he became my friend. And I copied the dog when he was moving, and I was telling to the growing up, mira, look, I can move like a cuchi, because I was too young to say cuchillo, pig.
Oh.
Cuchillo is the Spanish word for a knife. When the dog bite you, then never let go. So they call him as a nickname, cuchillo. And I was too young to say cuchillo.
Oh, that is so great.
C-H-I-L-L-O. So I said, like cuchi. And they laugh and they give me money. And I said to myself, this is a hell of a business. And every time that I was in trouble, I said, Gucci. They laughed. I get away with murder. I came to America. Johnny Garzo, they told me, Johnny Garzo is very, very famous, but he have a big ego. He's very egotistical. Please him. So every time he asked me something, I go, Gucci. And the next day, Pete, my name was no Charo. My name was the Gucci Gucci guy.
That is still so great.
If I don't say Gucci Gucci, the audience is going to be disappointed.
Right.
But when I grow up, I realized Gucci Gucci was not the whole thing. And because I was trained by greatest teacher, graduated with Andrés Segovia in Madrid, Spain, Pete, the guitar saved me. My best friend, I practice at night, like your show, Nightlife with Pete Suava.
Yeah.
I practice hours at night. I love the night. And I'm so trained that I'm so grateful that I was also educated as a musician, because Gucci Gucci is just for fun, but it's nothing, just fun.
Well, it's part of like your whole persona. You're funny. You sing, you dance. You kind of do it. You're like an old school entertainer. That's what's so, there are very few people like that still left. I think that's so great. And my first memories of you, Charo, were of playing the guitar. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like I fell in love with the guitar at an early age and you were part of that reason. So that's
Thank
why it's
you.
Extra
Muchas
special
gracias.
To have you Please. Here.
I am so honored to talk to you because Gucci Gucci really is a way to the bank. That's it. I'm very grateful to that phrase. I never give it a dollar to the dog that I copy the dog since I broke. But no, if you get to see me, or I will go to your studio, because I like you very much. You want to see that in no more than 3 minutes, salsa, fun, costume, get to know the audience. But after that, I sit down on the stool and I play music, incredible music.
Yeah.
It's flamenco or classical. You will love
hear
El Concierto de Aranjuez.
I would love to have you in the studio if you're ever up north in Wisconsin. Obviously, you're welcome. And I feel like me not having a coochie coochie, that's kind of held me back in show business. I need a phrase like that. So maybe you can help me come up with that, because I think that would take me to the next level.
Pete, it worked for me.
I know it did.
When I'm in trouble, I was talking with a lawyer, I'm not kidding you, regarding a serious problem, business. And I didn't know how to answer the question. I said, "Gucci, Gucci," everybody laughed. I said, "Wow." I was talking also everywhere I'm in trouble. I say, "Gucci, Gucci," and it saved me.
Charles, can we keep you for a couple more minutes? We have to do a very quick break.
Please.
All right.
Please,
I've got like two more questions for you.
Gracias.
Oh, fantastic. This is so much fun. Charles is here, ladies and gentlemen, on Nightlight. She's going to give us a couple more minutes on the other side of this break. You can see her in Baraboo, October 11th at 7 p.m. We'll be right back with more Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Closing out the Civic Media Spotlight for this week, we go to the John and Gordy Show. Covering a story outside their usual home base of Madison, the guys talk about Mayor Doug Dinney of Wausau, who this week illegally removed the city's ballot drop box and posed for a photo while doing so.
It's the John and Gordy Show.
Do you know what this means?
Wouldn't you like to know, weather boy?
You're pretty high and far out, aren't you? What kind of kick are you on, son?
No good bastard. Your show sucks.
What made me think this was a good day to stop drinking?
Buddy, you want coffee?
Coffee.
Black coffee.
Coffee.
They warned us about people like you!
What a load of crap.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
We'll do it live!
And that's the way it is.
On 92.7 FM, WMDX. Take it away, boys.
It's hard to top that, you know.
Yeah, it is. It is. 7:06 and 50 degrees this morning. Some fog in a few places. It's looking bright and sunny here, though, in Madison.
What a great, beautiful day yesterday as well.
Yeah. 77 for a high for today.
Terry Bell's in the studio right now.
Morning, Terry.
Morning, guys.
What are you guys covering this time?
Folks probably already know, listening to this show by now, that the mayor of Wausau took it upon himself to take a absentee ballot drop box.
Wasn't supposed to do that, was he?
No, by all accounts. He claims he's well within his rights.
Okay.
He's but, an elected official. Doesn't he can know. Do anything.
Maybe he didn't know.
It should. Well, you know, you could... You know, he may well believe that, but it's not a good look. I mean, he didn't consult with any other top officials, posed for a picture, in fact, it seems.
Amazing stuff.
And he ran partly, part of his platform when he ran for mayor was his opposition to drop boxes.
Okay.
And, you know, you could argue there were better ways for him to go about this. There's a lot of public backlash. There mm-hmm. was a big protest the other night.
Yeah.
Now, you got to just kind of think about it a second. It's actually humorous. It's almost like it could be a joke. This guy ran for mayor on the very topic of removing the drop boxes.
That was his platform.
That's what drove him into the mayorship. And people loved it enough to elect him.
Yeah, they voted him.
There's more to this, though. So he was just elected this past April, I believe. I'm from Wausau, so I still stay pretty in touch with what's going on there.
Right.
The former mayor, Katie Rosenberg, she got through city council some policy to put filtration in to take PFAS out of city water there, mm-hmm. and it made city taxes go up, and that's a large reason why people didn't want her reelected. And then, instead went with this guy.
What?
Oh, no. Oh, so they didn't mind drinking PFAS.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, maybe it has some health benefits and then to get plastic into your system.
And then, of course, you know, let's take away the opportunity for people to drop off their ballots. Another great idea. Oh, my God. What is happening?
Going in Wausau?
I am just, I'm losing it now.
All right. I guess we know what's in the water there.
Yeah. Boy, good one, Sam.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Nice point to bring up. Let's, let's get the TV coverage up there from WSAW. Let's check out what they have to say.
Email correspondence between Mayor Doug Dinney and City Council Chair Lisa Rasmussen indicates Dinney moved the ballot box from outside City Hall.
I spoke with the city clerk in person today, and she told me she can't comment on this right now, but is working to get security footage. This is a picture of Dinney with a hard hat on and the ballot box on a dolly.
Oh,
the picture came from email correspondence between mayor and city council president.
Beautiful. So there's some coordination there. And I just want, I have to mention this because based on the Supreme Court's decision in July on drop boxes, city clerks have the right to choose if they want a drop box. The mayor does not have that right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
So it is illegal.
It is
illegal. He broke the law doing this.
Yeah.
All right?
That's it. Okay.
You know, Wisconsin Eyes, CBS 58, Emily Fannin, and WisconsinPolitics.com's J.R. Ross discuss this on Wisconsin Eye.
I call it a trend yet, but it could be a trend related to municipalities voting to not have voters use them in the upcoming November elections. Now, in the spring of 2021, to put this in perspective, the Wisconsin Elections Commission found that were 570 drop boxes being used. We have asked the Wisconsin Elections Commission how many are in use now. They are not keeping track of that, they said. That's up to local municipalities. But this comes as Republicans have been really frustrated ever since the state Supreme Court reinstated them. They have tried to talk some voters out of it.
We have to use every tool in the toolbox. Well, these communities are taking a tool out of the toolbox, Republicans, without a way to return the ballot via Dropbox. So are you unleveling the playing field, if you will, because you have such concerns about these being used or don't like the fact they're being used, that you actually hurt the cause for the GOP by not embracing them?
They're not geniuses. The Republican Party in Wisconsin, not a bunch of geniuses.
Got it. Check their tools in their toolbox.
Milwaukee County, two Waukesha County, and three Dodge County areas opted to stop using drop boxes for the presidential election. Wausau resident Pamela Bannister, speaking at a city council meeting Tuesday night, saying it accomplishes nothing positive and amounts to, in my estimation, voting interference and intimidation.
Right.
Now, I thought the mega anti-vax movement would have at least removed a chance of, some close voting. I thought people, if they didn't get the vaccine, they might, fall away from the flock, so to speak. Now we have drop boxes. Now they're taking that option away.
I don't get this at all.
They're angry that the Supreme Court, the liberal Supreme Court in the state, decided that drop boxes were okay.
Of course they were.
And they are okay.
They are fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
The drop box in Wausau was sealed up. It wasn't active. It wasn't being used. It wasn't even cemented to the ground. And that's why the guy was able to take it away. And it was just kind of a show thing.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
And now it's blowing back. It was illegal.
Mm-hmm. 19 past the hour. Coming up next, Brittany Merlot. Update on the weather on 92.7 WMDX.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.